So first, thoughts. And here we're using the we're going to look at the verses that Mr. Spurgeon lists. Matthew 5:28 says, "I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." You can see how that relates to thoughts. Colossians 4:6, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how to get an answer, how you ought to answer each one." Can you see how that relates to thoughts? You see my question mark. I am confused. Let's look at his one on words. The verses he uses, Ephesians 5:4, "Neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks." That relates to words. 2 Timothy 2:22, "Flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, and those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart." Does that sound like words to you? Again, question mark. So I want you to notice something. I think these verses don't fit where in these statements. And in fact, I think they need to be exchanged. Okay? And so I'm doing something that is very frightening to me. I'm correcting Charles Haddon Spurgeon. I went back and I looked at our various old copies that I could find online, various sources. It all seems to be some verses got swapped by somebody. I'm sure Mr. Spurgeon didn't do it. It was probably the publisher. But having said that, now let's go back and start looking at some of these ideas. So you see, there's the exchange we're looking for. And the question now is, what is forbidden in the seventh commandment? The seventh commandment forbids all unchaste thoughts, words, and actions. Let's look at first the issue of thoughts. Again, Jesus said in Matthew 5:28, this is in what context? Do you remember in Matthew 5, what's going on? Sermon on the Mount. And so in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, Jesus talks, he begins by, "Blessed are those who," and he talks about heart issues, "who are poor in spirit." And so one of the vital things that Jesus was doing in his teaching was saying, he was comparing the biblical religion to the religion of the official religion, where people had externalized it, where it was all about behavior. Do you have your right prayer shawl on? Are you properly washing your hands before meals? And all those kinds of issues. And they were so satisfied when they had the externals right, their heart was wrong. And so Jesus called them, "You're like a whited sepulcher." And that was a grave that had been whitewashed. So it looks nice and clean on the outside. On the inside, it's not. It's defiled. So he kept emphasizing, if I can put it this way, true religion is of the heart, not merely outward performance. And so in the context of the Sermon on the Mount, that's a major theme, he says, "I say to you, whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." He quoted before that, you know, you read it, here's the command. I'm telling you, if it's a sin, if you've had an attitude of the heart, you're guilty of breaking the seventh commandment. So just like the command on murder, well, I've never actually murdered anyone. And he would say, but have you murdered with the attitude of your heart? And so again, here he says, it's an attitude of the heart that violates the seventh commandment. 2 Timothy, Paul says, "Flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart." The contrast between youthful lust and a pure heart. So the first thing of the seventh commandment speaks to is the thoughts. How are we doing so far? Make sense? That shouldn't be surprising if we're familiar with how Jesus approaches the scripture. But that's the whole point. We understand that the commandments speak to the heart because that's what Jesus said. When Jesus preached on the Ten Commandments or used them, he said, let's go back to the heart issue. Don't be satisfied just because, you know, you you didn't pick up a log on the Sabbath day. In your heart, were you dishonoring the Lord during the Sabbath day? Things like that. But again, the issue of thoughts is vital, because we're going to trace the development from thoughts to words and actions, or from the source to symptoms. Remember, Jesus said, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. What's he talking about there? Why would he have to tell them it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you? Well, remember the Jews were very much had a lot of dietary restrictions. And they might say, matter of fact, on 4th of July, we had a lengthy conversation about what does bacon really look like. On this side of the ocean, it has, the smaller the sliver of meat and the bigger the slab of fat, the more American it looks. Go to the other side of the Atlantic, you don't see any fat in it. And they both call it bacon. Well, we can debate that later. But either way, to a Jewish person, if it comes from pork, it's forbidden. I told you about the Jewish butcher who lived down the hall from us at our apartment complex. And one time I saw him going into his apartment with a package of meat. You know, he worked at the grocery store. He was a butcher. And there was a package of pork chops. And we said, pork chops? What are you doing with pork chops? And he just said, it's lamb chops. Right there on the label it said pork chops. Well, he declared them lamb, and so I guess it was lamb officially. But in other words, what goes into you defiles you. And so someone may say, I've never touched pork in my life. I've never had a shrimp cocktail in my life. And all the other rules you might say. Jesus says, it's not what goes in that defiles. It's what comes out of your mouth, because it proceeds from the heart. Okay, so that's what we're saying, from the source to the symptoms, thoughts to words and actions. So let's look at the words that are related to the seventh commandment. What comes out of our mouth and how that can speak to the seventh commandment. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving thanks. So these things of filthiness, coarse jesting, speaking about using inappropriate vocabulary and speaking about unseemly things should have no part in a Christian's conversation. Inappropriate jokes, inappropriate conversation, we're told have nothing to do with that. Colossians 4:6, now we put it back here. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Why? What is he telling us here? We should suck on salt pills during the days when we're having conversations. What's he mean? Season your speech with salt. Salt of the earth is one of the concepts that he talks about. What did they use salt for back then? Preserving. It did make food taste, but the Bible even says egg yolk without salt is no joke. It's awful. I mean, egg white. Seasoning is good, but preserving is vital. And so our speech should have the antiseptic effect of being seasoned with salt. It should be immunized from impurity. And so our speech, what we say, what we talk about, and how we talk about things can break the seventh commandment. Now, I'll be honest with you. This is a lesson where you might notice I'm painting kind of broad generalities. That's very intentional. And so I'm not going to give a long list of examples here. Enough said. How about actions? How can our actions violate the seventh commandment? Ephesians 5:3, but fornication, all uncleanness, or covetousness, not even being named among you, is fitting for the saints. When he says, not even, it is so foreign, it should be so foreign to a Christian's life, it's not even named. In other words, that's the idea. Immoral behavior should be totally just not even in the context of a Christian's life. Galatians 5:19, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness. And so moral impurity is very clearly forbidden by the scriptures. It's a heart issue. It's a vocabulary issue. It's a behavioral issue. So far, so good. So are we clear on this, that the scriptures are clear that Christians are under moral standards? And we have a problem in the culture we live in, that too often we're more seasoned by our culture than we are by the salt of God's grace. Let's move on. One of the older commentators on the catechism is a guy named Fisher. And he quotes, he has a catechism on the catechism. So this is question 39 of a series of questions he's asking about question whatever of this catechism question. Here's what he says. What are the proper remedies against lust and all the incentives to it? So what do we do about this problem of impurity? One, a serious reflection upon the all-seeing eye of an infinitely holy God. I'm going to need your help here. Can anyone find Genesis 39:9? That's a good one. Later I'm going to ask for Job. So do you think you can find Genesis 39:9? All right, Mr. Cook, nice and loud for us, please. When Joseph was approached about a sinful behavior, notice he said it wouldn't be right, humanly speaking, but also he was very aware, how can I do this when God is watching? Remember, be careful, little eyes, what you do. There's a Father up above looking down in love. So he was very aware of the all-seeing eye of God and said, how can I do that when God is watching me? It would dishonor the God who's been so kind to me. We heard in the testimony on the video we watched how that man wakes up every morning just amazed at God's grace. How could I offend the God who had been so kind to me? One way to avoid the problem of lust is be aware of God's presence and an all-seeing eye. That's the fear of the Lord. Next, walking in the Spirit, which will preserve us from fulfilling the lusts of the flesh. Quote that to us or read it to us, Barb. Okay. Galatians 5:16. If you walk in the Spirit, you shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh. So the point is, if I'm walking in the Lord, being guided by the Holy Spirit, it's going to keep me off that other path. The path of obedience keeps you off the path of disobedience. That's shocking, isn't it? A walking close to the Lord keeps me away from things that are far from the Lord. Three, keeping a strict watch over our hearts. Proverbs 4:23. Anyone have that one? Proverbs 4:23. Have it in their heart or have it in the book before them? Yes, sir. Greg. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it spring your whole life. But just the idea of intentionally guarding your heart. Job 31, we're told, relates to this, studying to shun all occasions of the sin by the external senses. In other words, being diligent to avoid the sins of lust. Job 31:1. Job is right before Psalms. So Job, when God said, I want to find a, you know, Satan, have you considered the righteous Job? Have you looked at Job? He's a man who I honor for his obedience. It wasn't an accident. Job was purposeful in where he looked. Holiness isn't an accident. Now, if a godly man like Job had to be intentional about his eyes, then Psalm 119, verse 37 will relate to this. And fervent prayer to God to be kept from impure, from lust and all temptations to it. Psalm 119, verse 37. Yes, ma'am. Say it again so I can hear it. Okay. Excellent. Asking God. So Job says, I've made a commitment not to look. And the psalmist prays, and God turned my eyes. So who's responsible? Both of us. I'm dependent on the Lord to help me to turn my eyes from worthless things. Okay? So Fisher said, here's some areas we can look at, thinking about the God, how can I have deal with the lust issue? One, be aware of God's presence and that he sees us. Two, walk in the Spirit. Three, make a decision to guard your heart and your eyes and ask God for help. I understand. I don't know a whole lot about computers. I have learned when they're not working, make sure it's plugged in. Okay, so I'm making progress. But I understood there used to be an old concept that described the problems with computers, and they called it garbage in, garbage out. If you give a computer faulty software, you're going to have faulty results. Or faulty data, you're going to have faulty results. Garbage in, garbage out. Well, that's a good expression for our thought life as well. If you're taking in garbage thoughts, it's going to lead to garbage thoughts and garbage words and garbage action. Or if we can put it this way, holiness in, holiness out. So that's part of that guarding your heart, being careful what you put into it. There's some people that, you know, are very proud of a very high-performance vehicle. And so they study hard to make sure they get just the best gasoline available, just the best oil and all those things. It's my precious car. I don't want anything in it that's going to be anything less than the highest performance. As a Christian, which would we consider is more important, the performance of our car or the performance of our heart? So being guarded about what goes in and what goes out. As you think about the concept, is there any kind of biblical counsel that would help us in that direction? Okay, I know you're all thinking it, so I'll just go ahead and show it to you. Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Those are some helpful tests. I've heard of people that will print that out on a piece of notepaper or something and put it on top of their television or their computer monitor. Or maybe even better, just go ahead and tape it right across the screen of your phone. But a test, should I be filling my mind with this? And so what should I be thinking about? Well, God gives us a good list of things and a good test. Is it noble, just? Is it lovely? Fisher has another question. This is number 4, so I'm skipping around a little bit. And he said, what are the usual incentives to unchaste thoughts? What causes us thought problems, he asks. And he actually quotes from the Westminster Longer Catechism. And we thought 176 questions was the shorter catechism. Maybe not 176. Anyway, so here are some examples. I can't remember. This is the wording of the Westminster Longer Catechism. So we're talking about a date somewhere between 1640 and 1643. Okay? This is the problems they were having with encouragements to impure thoughts about 400 years ago. John remembers well that season. Lascivious songs, books, pictures, dancings, stage plays, and the likes. So be careful of the books, the pictures, the music, and the entertainment you pursue. Remember Solomon said in the book of Ecclesiastes? There's nothing new under the sun. 400 years later, that list is still pretty good, isn't it? So I asked the question, what would that look like today? Be careful about the input into your heart. Frankly, back then, books were very expensive and not commonly held. You remember that John Bunyan, when he got married, his wife brought in their library into the home, and they had, I think, two books, the Bible and Fox's Book of Martyrs. But books were a problem back then they had to be warned. Well, the problem is, with the simple connection, there is all kinds of stuff that we need to be guarding about. Mentioned, let's see, books, pictures, lascivious songs. Do we have a problem with music issues these days? Could that be an issue? Could that be a problem? In the 1600s, they were worried about the music people listened to. In the 1600s, that was over 2 years ago. Do you think people listen to more music or less today? It is now, not uncommon to see people that have growths coming out of their ears. It's amazing how frequent that is. So I was thinking about, I spent a little time just using the internet, looking to see. One of the things that gets to me is the way I think of the significance of music is jingles, advertising songs. I am cursed because I could quote all kinds of jingles from 30, 40 years ago. McDonald's, Coca-Cola. I watched it. You kids, I hope this isn't still on. I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener. I haven't had an Oscar Mayer wiener in about 90 years. But I can still remember the song. Jingles work. Music helps implant the words onto your memory and heart. I regret listening to Oscar Mayer Wiener commercials. What other kinds of music creative music implanting things on our heart that shouldn't be there? The only problem with the Oscar Mayer Wiener is the absence of any nutrition and the presence of lots of chemicals. But aside from that, okay. But you get my point. There's a good example of something to think about. This comes from German. There's even a German word for it. I can't remember the word now. But the scientists are coming up with what they call earworms, the concept of earworms. And it's the idea is that music has a way of just worming its way into your brain. And so they call it earworms. Scientists have a name for it. This is from an article I don't have it right in front of me, but one of the articles I was looking for strictly secular articles, Psychology Today, Scientific American, those kind of places. Scientists have a name for it, earworms or involuntary music imagery. Frankly, earworms is more effective to me. It's why jingles work. According to neurologist Oliver Sacks, earworms are the evidence of the overwhelming and at times helpless sensitivity of our brains to music. You put ideas to music, and your brain at times is helpless to defend against it. It just worms its way in like a parasite. Earworms is what the scientists call it. And another study was done where they brought in a bunch of college students, okay? And they did some studies, and they had them watch an advertisement for something that was unethical. One of them was a website that would help you cheat on your forms so you would get more retirement money than you deserved. And then they figured out, what are college students don't think about retirement funds. And so they said, but even that had given them certain results. So then they said, okay, and they invented a phony website for plagiarism. They developed a phony ad for a plagiarism website. Now that's current to college students. And here was the thing. They did the ad with music and without music, and they did the ad with certain kinds of music. And you know what they noticed? You played the right music, and it made the students much more receptive to the ideas that were unethical. Just the kind of music that, not the, even the words, but the background, you know, you watch an ad or something, and there's always music to it or whatever. Just the style of music, like it was a happier music, it gave them a happier feeling about plagiarism. And so here were these scientists saying, and again, this is not some religious group. These are just scientists saying, what is it that influences how people think? And they were saying, you know that? If you put music to the ideas, it worms its way into your heart. And you're almost defenseless against it. And it can actually cause you to make unethical decisions because it gives you a sense of happiness when you think about it. Now, if that was a problem in the 1600s, what about today? And so that, to me, is something that struck me when I was reading Mr. Fisher's comments, quoting from a 400-year-old statement. Here are some areas to watch out for. So they said, watch out for these areas and apply these things instead. Be sensitive. God is watching. Or could we say God is listening? Be sensitive to some of those other issues that were described. As a matter of fact, let me just go back to that list again from their category. Serious reflection on the all-seeing eye of God, walking in the Spirit, keeping a strict watch over our hearts, studying to shun all occasions of the sin by external senses. That's making a covenant with your eyes, as Job said. And fervent prayer, asking God to keep my eyes from those things. That's the negative, or the positive. And then the negative was, beware of these areas. It seems appropriate to end with the reflections of a theologian. Why does God want us to guard our hearts? I don't know. Maybe because it tends to run away. And then he starts thinking about a bone. Our hearts are prone to wander. And so the good counsel from God's word is, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. So be careful what you put into it. All of that, I think, is a faithful consideration of the seventh commandment. Two words in Hebrew. But in English, thou shalt not commit adultery.